This podcast is a part of the Neuhoff Media Podcast Network.
She was there on a study, you know, session, basically, and we'll find out what she saw on the ground in Ukraine. A little later today, Tanya Andrews will be in from Crossing Healthcare. 108,000 people died of overdose in this country in 2022. Those are the latest news statistics. We'll talk about that and the resources we have in this community. Don't go anywhere. News is next.
This is Brian Barnhart, voice of the Fighting Illini on Decatur's home for Fighting Illini athletics for over 75 years. WSOY Decatur, 1340 AM, 103.3 FM, and streaming at nowdecatur.com.
They still haven't found six bridge collapse victims in Baltimore. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. They are presumed dead now.
I spent a good part of yesterday with the families, praying with them, praying for them, and praying for their peace.
Maryland Governor Wes Moore just told Fox divers will keep working to find the construction workers in a recovery mission, but it'll take a long time to rebuild the bridge.
The economic impact that this is having, not just on the state of Maryland, but on the entire country, is staggering. We're talking about a port that's responsible for over 51 million tons of foreign cargo. That's the largest in the country.
The National Transportation Safety Board has the voyage data recorder from the cargo ship that crashed into the bridge, trying to determine what went wrong and why. Texas's controversial border law remains blocked. A federal appeals court extended its hold on the law as the federal government calls it an overreach into immigration authority. Texas's Republican governor says they have the right to stop an invasion, with a law allowing police to arrest migrants who cross the border illegally. The Trump campaign's angry. A judge in New York City issued a gag order before the former president's first criminal trial, claiming it unconstitutionally blocks his free speech rights.
He's not allowed to make public statements about witnesses, court staff, jurors, and others in his case, with an upcoming trial date set for April 15th. The former president's charged with filing false business records when he reimbursed his then personal attorney for hush money payments to an adult film star who alleged an affair.
Fox's Jessica Rosenthal and other Republicans have been taken off the air. NBC News is dropping Ronna McDaniel days after hiring the former Republican National Committee chair, which upset MSNBC viewers and hosts.
Many anchors sounding off in lockstep, including President Biden's former press secretary.
This is about truth versus lies.
Jen Psaki also warned democracy was in danger after McDaniel was hired. The chairman of NBC Universal issued a mea culpa while announcing the termination of McDaniel. Quote, no organization, particularly a newsroom, can succeed unless it is a cohesive and aligned.
That's Fox's Lucas Tomlinson. America's listening to Fox News.
Don't let everyday aches and pains keep you from living your best life.
I don't think I really understood what people meant when they talked about pain, until I started feeling it myself.
Start feeling better every day with Relief Factor, a daily supplement designed to support your body's fight against aches and pains.
Not only do I move better without pain, I just feel better.
Created by doctors, Relief Factor uses a unique formula of natural ingredients that target four metabolic pathways to address pain. Relief Factor doesn't just mask aches and pains, it helps reduce or even eliminate them.
Today, I do the things I love, and it doesn't occur to me to think about pain.
You can feel the difference all day, every day.
Join the over 1 million people who have tried Relief Factor's 3-week quick start kit. It's only $19.95. Visit relieffactor.com or call 1-800-4-RELIEF. That's 1-800-4-RELIEF. And feel the difference of Relief Factor.
The Ahmaud Arbery case is back in court in Georgia as three men implicated in the death of the black man who was killed while jogging appeal federal hate crimes convictions.
Attorneys for Greg and Travis McMichael and William Roddy Bryan will ask a federal appeals court in Atlanta to throw out their 2022 hate crimes convictions. The three white men who were convicted of murder in a Georgia state court found guilty of chasing and fatally shooting Ahmaud Arbery, a 25-year-old unarmed black man, in 2020, then found guilty of federal hate crime charges. The McMichaels receiving life sentences, Brian 35 years in prison. In court filings, their lawyers claim they chased Arbery because they believed he was a criminal, not because of his race. Prosecutors disagree. Arbery's family will reportedly be in Atlanta to rally against the appeal. Kristen Goodwin, Fox News.
There is another race-based controversy in Oklahoma.
A recall election next week will determine whether Enid, Oklahoma City Council member Judd Blevins keeps his seat or not. Blevins defended marching alongside white nationalists in Charlottesville, Virginia in 2017 during a public forum on Tuesday when questioned about his ties to racist groups. That participation became known only after his election last year. Enid Social Justice Committee Chair Christy Baldwin says she's backing Blevins' opponent, Cheryl Patterson.
She isn't normally someone that I would be supporting for public office. She's very conservative and I'm very liberal, but she is not a Nazi.
Blevins says he is, quote, opposed to all forms of racial hate, but stopped short of condemning white supremacy. Tanya J. Powers, Fox News.
Stocks are poised to rebound in Wall Street. Dow futures up more than 100 points before the opening bell. Somebody in New Jersey turned a $2 investment into $1.1 billion. The only winner of the Mega Millions fortune, the eighth largest U.S. lottery jackpot of all time. I'm Dave Anthony. This is Fox News.
Hey, ladies. Get ready for a night of fun and golf. Join us at Overlook Adventure Park on May 9th for Playing 5 to 9, the ultimate ladies' night out. Grab your girlfriends and enjoy 18 holes of mini golf with some exciting perks along the way. Get ready for surprises, vendors, special treats, drinks, and appetizers on certain holes, making your mini golf experience even more enjoyable. Don't miss Playing 5 to 9 at Overlook Adventure Park on May 9th.
Sure, it's not the easiest topic to discuss with your loved ones, but at Brentlinger & Earl, we can help guide you through the talk of a lifetime and pre-plan for the unexpected. It's a hard topic, but so very important. I'm Brian Mose, director here at Brentlinger & Earl. Pre-planning your funeral arrangements can help relieve the burden on your family during an already difficult time. It ensures that your wishes are carried out exactly as you want them to be, and that your unique life and values are reflected. Just visit BrentlingerAndEarl.com and find out more, or call me directly at 217-875-1283.
Here's a look at your News Channel 20 storm team forecast today. Mostly cloudy, then sunny, high of 48. Tonight, mostly clear, low of 31. For Thursday, sunny with a high of 60. And Friday, partly sunny, high near 68. Current temperature in downtown Decatur, 30 degrees. Your WSOI time, 8:06. This look at your weather brought to you by Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Homes.
We got an action-packed final hour of the company here. We're going to talk about those overdoses of this country. 108,000 people OD'd and died in 2022. Latest statistics, we'll talk to Tanya Andrews from Crossing Healthcare. But next, one of our favorite Milliken professors, fresh back from Ukraine.
Byers & Company, WSOY, 1340 AM, 103.3 FM, streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
All right, we're back here on kind of a cloudy day, but it looks like things are going to shape up for Easter weekend. I know some of the schools, Milliken was out last week. I think saw one of our guys, one of our interns, like Merle Forsyth, must be out this week. It's kind of all over the place, but Easter weekend is here. Feels very early, but we're ready to go. And so you got the Illini, you know, clearly, you know, capturing the imagination of everyone. You got the men's and women's tournament, which is, everybody's, you know, worrying about their brackets and watching. I don't know how much work gets done this week or next. We'll see. But there are still, the world keeps spinning and things still keep happening. And it is hard for me to believe. I just got, last week I told you, Howard sent over a copy of the new book about 680 days in Ukraine. And we think about what we've done, or at least I do, over the last 680 days. What's your life look like? You know, you've got the flu and you've had great weeks and you've been on vacations and trips and you've had bad days at work and great days at work and you get to watch the football game. It's been a war for 680 days. And every man, woman, and child there. It's not some battle, you know, front out over here that doesn't impact everyone else. The horrors of things that I have learned via Howard, you know, about using children's toys to be attached to, you know, explosive devices. I mean, things that you just would like to think humanity is not capable of doing, yet we see over and over it is. So I'm very anxious to talk to our guest who's been on with us before, and a great pleasure to welcome back Dr. Laura Dean, Associate Professor of Political Science. You just got back Sunday?
Yep, Sunday from Ukraine.
All right. So what was the purpose of this trip and how long were you there?
So we got, me and some colleagues from Worcester Polytechnic Institute got a National Science Foundation grant to investigate human trafficking. And we're looking at human trafficking recruitment during war. So Ukraine kind of offers us an interesting look at the recruitment patterns, especially because Ukrainians are very technologically savvy. And so they use a lot of different apps. And so I basically went there to investigate and talk to local anti-trafficking advocates and kind of figure out what they're seeing on the ground. So what kind of dynamics with human trafficking have changed as a result of the war?
Okay, so let's first of all just give me the who, when, and what. You know, you were there for how long? 16 days?
Yeah, so I was there for 16 days. It would have been 17, but there was a Lufthansa strike, so.
Yeah. crazy how that stuff, you know, even that impacts a war. So you 16 days, you're on the ground. Where in Ukraine?
So I actually went to a bunch of different cities because there are different anti-trafficking NGOs located throughout the country. So I was based in Lviv and Kyiv. Kyiv's the capital. I went to Lutsk. I went to Ternopil, different Uzhhorod, different cities in western Ukraine, really on the border. And so those are the big anti-trafficking NGOs that see the majority of survivors of human trafficking.
Okay. Before we get into the specifics of the trafficking and what you found and the technology and the apps and all of that, just describe your experience as a human being in a country so torn apart by war for this long.
Yeah, I mean, so I lived in Ukraine when I was a graduate student, and so I was like, I got this. This will be fine. So basically, my train gets in at like 2, and it was about 2 hours until the first air raid alert. And I was like, what is that? And it sounds like a tornado siren.
Right.
And then somebody, a voice in Ukrainian, is yelling at you to take shelter. And so I'm in my apartment, and I'm like, what do I do? So I basically went and sat on the toilet.
Yeah.
And then there's an app on Telegram that you can actually look and see what bombs are coming at you and what is actually flying at you. So sometimes it's a ballistic missile. Sometimes it's a MiG flying around, because there are people that actually monitor where planes and drones take off from in Russia, and then they anticipate what is actually coming at you. So for me, that was the most frightening aspect, was you hear the alarm and then you go on the app and see, and if it's a ballistic missile, you should run.
Yeah.
If it's a MiG, sometimes they just fly around. They literally fly around Ukraine to like torment people. So,
and so you now think about this just, you know, year after year.
Yeah. I mean, I dealt with it for 2 weeks, and I thought I would deal with it a lot better than I did. I had a lot of anxiety about things, especially when you're walking out on the street and you know that like a ballistic missile is coming towards you. That is frightening. So they send out these alerts, and then there's an app that you can actually look and see what oblast or what like region of Ukraine the alerts are happening towards. So they can actually see where the plane is going. I had a lot of anxiety about it. We actually did have a couple hits when I was in Kyiv. We had two really large battles, the largest bombings that they've had since January, actually. And you could hear. So I woke up one morning at 5 o'clock in the morning to my building shaking, and I heard booms. And it was basically the anti-aircraft, the Patriot missiles that the United States thankfully has given Ukraine that protected us. So that was the one thing that was very getting woken up to a boom.
Yeah.
And I thought it was the metro, but the metro is closed down. And then I sat there and my building was shaking and my windows were shaking in central Kyiv.
It's amazing. What are the people like? I mean, what is the attitude? I know it's hard to encompass an entire country, but as you just, you know, visited normal day-to-day people, what's the mood?
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of surprised at how resilient they are. So, like, I would get the alert on my phone and I'm like, okay, what do I do? Where should I go? Find the nearest shelter. And Ukrainians were much more relaxed because, again, they've dealt with this for 2 years.
Day in and day out.
Yeah, and so one thing I discovered during the, like, big bombings in Kyiv is that there's actually, like, an alert to hide, but then there's an alert where they know that things are coming, and then they know that it's a lot. Because basically the 5 o'clock in the morning hit was 30 missiles coming at the same time, and they do that because then it's harder for them to shoot them down, right?
Right.
And so then you got an extra alert. And so the extra alert means run to the metro if you can. I was too far away from the metro. I lived
to get
blocks.
Underground.
Yeah, and so I basically just sheltered in place and went to my bathroom.
All right. It's amazing. Thank you for sharing the info. I just think we have such a short attention spans, you know, as Americans, and part of that's, you know, defense mechanisms in life. But part of it is it's just real easy to forget what people are going through when you don't have to see it every day.
Yeah. And I think for me, I was just surprised at how often they happen.
Yeah.
I mean, basically in a work day, you, especially in Kyiv, you're experiencing 2 to 3 times a day. And so, you know, you got to go to a shelter if it's particularly bad. And then they also do it at night to really kind of, and like, think about children living through that, getting woken up numerous times a night. That's just like psychologically taxing.
As hard as it is for most of us to understand war, you know, and the atrocities that happen in war, there are other people standing around waiting to take advantage of that in other ways, particularly where you have refugee situations or people fleeing a country. How much of that plays into the trafficking?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. That's why the, you know, situation in Ukraine is so dire and so important for us to research, because that is the, like, the largest mobile population since World War II going into Europe. And so that's why we wanted to investigate it. But I think there's a lot of caveats of the crime that we, yeah, we were surprised that has happened. So.
Okay, so what did you learn? And particularly, how did you use social media and technology and platforms to do your research?
Yeah, so we knew that there were a bunch. So basically, you know, the war started. We knew that there were a bunch of like refugee groups on different aspects of social media. So Telegram is the big social media. It's like the Facebook of Ukraine. So people started posting things like, I need a place to stay. I need a ride from here. I need to get over the border. What information do you have about that? And so we started seeing these, you know, posts coming, and then we started seeing people, you know, warning about human trafficking. And so we knew we wanted to start investigating that. And so I'm working with colleagues at Worcester Polytechnic, and they're engineers. And so they actually scraped the Telegram data. So we've scraped over 25,000 posts on Telegram, and we've been able to identify that about 15% of them are suspicious. So it could be someone who's posting, I have a free place to stay.
But so only somebody 18 to 24-year-old women being like from Romania or whatever, yep, saying we welcome you in, could be bad actors that are just trying, yep, to either sex or labor, whatever kind of trafficking they're doing.
Yeah, and we can actually identify their IP address and identify a location, which has been interesting too. So we've been able to identify people who post a lot, like over thousands of posts. So we're trying to investigate, are these bots? Are these traffickers? What's the situation?
All right. And then how long, I mean, does this continue? Will there be like an actual published, here's what we learned, you know, what's the process look like?
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, so I went, you know, to Ukraine and talked to people and asked them what they actually saw. And it's surprising to me because a lot of the media has really focused on the sex trafficking, but they've seen mostly labor trafficking. And now they're increasingly seeing labor trafficking within Ukraine. So because there were so many people that left, people actually come back too. And then if they were trafficked, you know, in Poland or something like that, they'll actually come back to Ukraine to receive assistance, which I thought was interesting, because for them it's easier to get assistance from someone in their own language. So
yeah, I can't even imagine. And here we are, and most Americans and maybe most of the world, I don't know how all that works, have just kind of moved on, and yet that just continues to be just a daily part of their life every single day.
I mean, we can do something as Americans. We can write to our Congress people. You know, there are bills for funding of Ukraine for these Patriot missiles, for the anti-aircraft missiles that keep regular people in Ukraine safe every single day. Those supplies are running short because Congress hasn't acted on that. So if you feel like you want to, you know, support Ukraine and stand with Ukraine, you can always write to your representative and ask them to support Ukraine. And if they already are, thank them for doing that, because really those Patriot missiles, I've never really thought about missiles as much as I did on that trip, or being really thankful that the U.S. gave those Patriot missiles to Ukraine, because that was the only thing that kept us safe.
All right. Talk to me a little bit about the Human Trafficking Research Lab at Billiken University, just the overall, what it is that you guys do.
Yeah, so we do research on different human trafficking dynamics in Central Illinois.
What's the most surprising thing that people would find just here in Central Illinois that they didn't know, that's an obvious thing to you?
I would say that labor trafficking is very prevalent, but people don't actually identify it. I think sex trafficking is just much more identifiable. So the fact that we have labor trafficking happening here in our community.
And what does that mean specifically?
So people being exploited for the purpose of labor. So it could be farm workers. It could be people begging, on the side of the road. It could be people working in nail salons. So we've seen, you know, a lot of different investigations, and mostly it's like labor violations that are charged instead of actual human trafficking. But human trafficking happens within the labor, different types of labor industries. I mean, hotels are another big aspect of it. So
in those situations, can I ask, is the range from bringing somebody to a place and then kind of giving them bad setup, underpaying them and giving them bad circumstances, all the way down to just full-fledged like captivity and slavery?
Yeah, so from forced servitude, from basically making people like, you know, work for free, to indentured servitude, making people work off a debt, especially if it is a foreign-born individual.
I help you get here, and then now you work for me.
And then the debt is never paid off. Definitely like underpaying people or forcing people to do some sort of work that is exploitation.
So and then I would would assume, tell me if I'm wrong, that because of the mood right now and the politics of, you know, immigrants and people who are here, there's even less likely a chance for them to reach out for help because of they're scared of whatever their status might be, or they're reluctant to, you know, so they're victims without any really sort of mm-hmm. way of reaching out.
Yeah, I mean, immigration status is a huge thing that is used to keep people in a trafficking situation. So traffickers will say to them, well, if you go to the police, they're going to deport you, so you can't report this.
And they would rather, as sad as it is to say out loud, live under those conditions here than to go back to where they came from.
Yeah, and I think that's why we do see such a big self-identification with victims and survivors of trafficking. And usually it happens a very long time after their trafficking situation. They go to a talk or hear the news or something that says that, you know, and they recognize that as their exploitation situation. And so yeah, and then they can finally get help. But yeah, it's interesting. We don't actually have a ton of identification happening during the trafficking.
It happens after.
Yeah, so, and usually by the people themselves. So.
What do you hope to accomplish? I mean, what can, you know, a group on the campus of Millikan University, working obviously with a lot of other organizations, what's the end goal? What's the hope? What would you like to have this accomplish?
I mean, so our adjudication research, I think, has been really surprising because, you know, in Macon County, there have been 10 crimes for human trafficking charged over the last, like, 20 years, and we found about 100 that could have been charged that had elements of trafficking. And so I think we're really hoping, we're thinking of making bench cards for judges to be able to recognize trafficking. We're trying to talk to prosecutors to be able to get them to attempt to charge trafficking instead of a lesser crime. Because again, when people look at the numbers, they say, oh, well, there's only 10, you know, happening in Macon County. It's not a problem here, but it is.
That was 10 that was identified, yeah, and clearly identified, yeah, and charged properly.
Yeah, in the Uniform Crime Report, which is like the big statistical database on crime in the U.S. Yeah, so I think we're hoping to do that. And because we sit on the Central Illinois Human Trafficking Task Force, we're on the ground with the police, we're talking to prosecutors and things like that. So they're always interested in hearing about the research. And I think having students there, showing them how to do the research and having them be advocates for, you know, charging for trafficking offenses is really good. You know, as a older person, I think they wouldn't really listen to me, but having younger students on the task force, people are interested.
And clearly there's a larger call for this. I mean, you're getting funding directly from the Department of Justice. I mean, people are aware that we're not doing this the right way.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of the hope of the task force is really the Department of Justice funding is really to kind of bring these different entities together, because many times police don't always talk to victim service providers, prosecutors don't always talk to them. So it's a time and funding to be able to bring us all together to talk about these issues and how we can combat trafficking more effectively in our region.
The students that you work with, I feel like you could get very cynical about life, you know, studying the worst of us, right? I mean, I really do. I mean, how do you, from a human level, you know, how do you take a deep dive in the worst that humanity has to offer and still remain a positive human being?
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing, especially with the adjudication research, right? So we're looking at child pornography charges. We're looking at, you know, different prostitution solicitation charges. And yeah, I mean, it's like a dark hole going down and seeing, especially when we coded the Macon County data, seeing it how often that happens in our region. Yeah, I mean, we have meetings where we talk about challenges and things like that. We take mental health days sometimes where you just need a break from the research. But yeah, I mean, it is taxing, but I think the students see it as valuable, especially because, you know, we serve on this task force where people ask them questions about the research, so they know what they're doing is important.
All right. At the end of the day, that's got to be enough.
Yeah,
right?
Hopefully.
Well, I'm glad you're back safe. And what Laura got to see over there, everybody's waking up to again this morning, and on and on and on. And in this country, I guess you have a right to whatever your opinion is, but to play politics with these people's lives just seems grotesque. They live it every day, and they are tenacious people. I got a chance a few weeks back, a month or so ago, there were some of their canine military officers here in Decatur training, and you could just see in their face, right? You know, mm-hmm. what they've lived through for the last couple of years, yeah. Is amazing stuff. Dr. Laura Dean, thank you for sharing your information with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Really appreciate it. And glad you're back safe. All right. We'll take a break. Here's Nick Smith with your 3-day forecast. Back with more right after this.
T
Today's going to be mostly cloudy, then sunny, high of 48. Tonight, mostly clear, low around 31. For Thursday, sunny with a high near 60. And Friday, partly sunny with a high of 68. Current temperature in downtown Decatur, 30 degrees. Your WSOY time is 8:24.
Thanks for calling Toyota. This is Jan.
Hi, Jan. My kids are really excited about spring break, so I'm looking for a new Toyota to help make it amazing.
Now until April 1st is a great time for a new Toyota. Imagine you and the kids in a Tundra on your way
to the lake to go speed boating.
Woo-hoo! Or even taking a RAV4.
To an animal sanctuary to pick goats.
Sounds like your kids aren't the only ones excited about spring break.
Ready, set, go get your Toyota today. Toyota. Let's go places. Dealer inventory may vary. See your participating Toyota dealer for details.
Hi, I'm Peggy Myers from Hickory Point Bank. We understand the importance of local ownership, stability, longevity, experience, the qualities that assure our customers that we're here not only for their benefit, but for the strength of the community we serve. One thing you can always count on, we'll always be committed to serving our friends and neighbors right here in Decatur. Hickory Point Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
I love that I have reminders on my phone. Appointments, birthdays,
anniversaries.
Exactly. It's our big anniversary sale this week at Carpet Weavers.
Now get half off installation on Mohawk's waterproof luxury vinyl floors. The installation is free on Mohawk Carpet. Get up to a $1,000 rebate on Mohawk Carpets and Floors. Instant rebates on all furniture. Plus, 2 years free financing.
Come home to Carpet Weavers,
where floors, furniture, and family meet.
Hi, JR from Speed Lube here again, reminding all of our clients how much we appreciate you and the services we provide that others may not. Here at Speed Lube, you have the choice to stay in your vehicle or wait in our lobby while we perform the service for you. Our full service includes a multi-point inspection that entails checking differential and transfer case fluids, along with all the other vital fluids underneath the hood. We also vacuum the floorboards, wash the exterior windows, and correct your tire inflation. All of this while providing a premium Pennzoil product. Thank you, Decatur and surrounding areas, for your 43 plus years of patronage. We look forward to seeing you again.
You're listening to Byers & Company, streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
Kiss?
I know. It's just bouncing all over for me. It's like, do you remember, like, the hot dog jumping into the bun at the drive-in movie in Grease?
Yeah, of course.
That's what I feel like with the bun music, too.
That's awesome. That's a good feeling.
No, it's not.
When you're a hot dog jumping into a bun, isn't that a good day?
No, it's not.
I think that's a positive thing.
Okay. I'm a curator.
Clearly not of classic rock.
No. Whoever curated that list doesn't know what classic rock is. That's my thing. It's like, and old people do it to young people all the time. This is a reverse of it.
Yep.
You know, where you just generalize things and they're like, it's all the same. Same time frame. And to me, it's like, okay, but not the same. Does it make sense?
100%.
Yes. Yeah. I can just tell when somebody puts together a list.
That they don't love it as much as you do.
Well, they don't know it. You know what I mean?
This isn't meant to be nuanced and very hyper niche. It's just classic rock.
Why are we using it?
It's just classic rock.
Okay.
Rock that's classic.
But he's there's different kinds of rock.
Right.
There's not
they
could have
just called
category.
It music.
Well, you know, that's kind of a little more accurate, to be honest
with you.
Here's
some music. That's today's bump.
I think actually that's not a bad idea. Here's some music.
That's right.
Sorry, Nicky failed.
No, he didn't fail. Somebody else put the list together. I like continuity of when you get a really cool list because one leads right into the other and the other and into conversations. And this is like a pinball machine, just like all over the place. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Getting whiplash?
A little bit. Just a little bit. We have a lot to get to here today. Tanya Andrix is in, and I want to talk about, we do have overdose numbers for 2022. Why are we so, why 2022? Why is it, with technology today, why does it take so long to get national statistics?
That's a really good question, and unfortunately, it just takes that long to compile data. We always feel like we're in arrears. So at the local level, we keep track of what we're seeing.
Okay, so we know more here than we do statistically nationally.
With that said, you know, the trends you're talking about, the 2022 data, is still very reflective of what we saw in the pandemic. And so, unfortunately, overdose deaths continued to rise. I believe in 2023, when the data is finally compiled and released, what we'll continue to see is not the deaths rising at the same rate, but not necessarily dropping. So it is a significant problem.
It is one of those, like mental health, anything else, all of this is all tied together in some ways. I've never been able to understand how we decide what our selective outrage is about, right? Is it a war? That 30,000 people die? Is it a terrorist attack that 3,000 people die? Is it COVID? Oh, what do you mean more than a million people? This isn't a thing. How we arrive at numbers, like what is severity to us and what isn't?
Yeah. I think that sometimes we can't as humans really grasp numbers in that sense. So I think what I've seen, and you and I've talked about this, is that when it affects you individually, when it impacts your life, it sometimes matters then. So when things happen in a large enough number and it affects enough people, then that sometimes will sway public opinion.
But I'm going to throw you one here that doesn't make sense in that regard, mental health.
Yeah, I know, because it affects everyone, all of us.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers are so large that you just don't. It may not be you, but someone in your circle are there, and yet we still treat it completely different than cancer.
I know, it's that stigma. I think that the conversations you and I continue to have, and people across our nation are having in a more open and honest way, will help with that. But it is so slow to move the needle on destigmatizing things. You and I have watched that over the years.
Oh.
And mental health is a hard thing. And overdoses, you know, unfortunately, our tactics as treatment providers have to change because the drugs are changing. And
an overdose today is not, probably not, still can be, but probably not an overdose of 15 years ago.
Correct. So heroin was the leading cause of overdose, and now it's synthetics, and so it's fentanyl. And then there's a new drug, xylazine, which is called Trank on the streets.
Right.
And it is a anesthetic drug used in veterinary medicine. It is being mixed with other medication, or other drugs, such as cocaine, things that are not an opiate. And so people who are using, you know, their drug of choice might be methamphetamines or cocaine or any other thing may have Trank in it, which it, the way it's described to me is that it sort of makes that high more intense or makes that drug more intense. It intensifies that. The problem is it's an anesthetic, so it reduces your respiratory rate. And it doesn't respond to Narcan.
Yeah. So every weapon you have, then there's something new comes out.
There is no safe way to consume illicit or street drugs. And it just needs to be, I need to be very direct and frank about that because, you know, we are seeing Trank across the country and we're seeing it here in our community.
All right. So what used to be a person, let's just say a functioning person with a cocaine addiction.
Yes.
Over years and years, heart deterioration, health problems.
Sure.
You can't
social
see
issues,
that death.
Right.
Or a heroin addict that builds up so much the body that you just have to keep doing more. Mm-hmm. And it ends up there's a tipping scale where more is more. And that's not a week thing. That's a month and month and year thing.
Years.
Now. Mm-hmm. People who may be thinking they're doing something way more innocuous than either one of those things can
weekend
be dead
parties.
Instantly.
Right. This is weekend parties. This is experimentation. You know, illicit drug use is a spectrum. It's a continuum, and it's been socially acceptable in our society. I think that, you know, you listen to music, you know that lots of people in different areas of walks of life have experimented or used illicit drugs, even cocaine in a party way or at periods of their life. You know, that's part of our history in our nation. And we've seen that. That isn't, it's never been a safe behavior. That holds so many more risks now because of the drug supply and because of what is likely in that drug supply. And, Trank is particularly frightening because, again, the reversal agents that we have, like Narcan, that our medics, our paramedics, that, you know, Narcan's everywhere. We give Narcan out in our lobby on a routine basis. I carry it in my car. You know, it's available, but it doesn't help with that. And so I think it's just really important to understand the environment has changed significantly. So the tactics that we as a society have used to reverse overdose deaths are not as effective as they once were. So we're not going to see that number just plummet.
No, my only hope is that one mom and or dad or both walk away every time we have this discussion and go, you know what? We've got pretty good kids, but we cannot have our head in the clouds and think that's not my house. That's not my school. That's not my, that's other people. Sure. And then I would just have you go back to when you were 17 or 18 100%. Years old and dumb decisions that you made that thankfully didn't end your life or someone else's, but could have, given the circumstances that we have today.
Absolutely. And it's all about knowledge and conversations. You know, frontal lobe development in teenagers is a little bit delayed. And so they're always going to make decisions that maybe don't make sense to us as adults.
And peer pressure matters more. All of that still is the same. It's just the outcome is different because they don't know what they're taking.
They don't, but I think teenagers are smart, and if you have really good conversations that are, you know, not emotional, but just made based on facts and the good information, teenagers make good choices a lot more often than they don't. And so I just encourage parents to, first of all, educate themselves in a realistic way, and then second of all, have open and honest dialogue with their teenagers.
But you know, this has always been the case. It was this way when I was in high school. Kids at St. T don't do drugs. St. T. Really?
Kids,
I'm hanging out with them. They do. You know,
it's tough. It's a hard thing.
But don't let that arrogance, just because you've got a comfortable life does 100%. Not mean this can't reach out and touch you. And in fact, sometimes there's often more access because of the resources. Quality life you've built and resources. And that doesn't make you a bad parent. I'm just saying, don't get that phone call that you can't ever reverse.
You're absolutely correct. And you know, the internet and the web is filled, social media is filled with grieving parents who could tell that story. And I think it's just a really important thing to educate yourself as a parent or as a community member and understand that the environment isn't, you know, drugs aren't what they were at Woodstock.
Nope. And 108,000 people isn't just a bunch of people who don't have any willpower or have any,
they were beautiful lives.
Mental illness, mental health. You know, we have the story, you know, today on Nadicator.com. You know, the video was released of this officer's involved shooting. I obviously can't speak to what was in the mind of the person who did what they did. And I will tell you with clarity, at that point, it doesn't matter to those two police officers or the safety of the community or anyone else. But the conversation has to be had. There clearly were mental health issues at some point when you would pull something out that you know you can't do anything with. People will speculate about death, you know, suicide by cop, all that. I don't know. What I'm saying is that mental illness goes into a lot of this. And we better start having bigger and better conversations about how we tackle mental health in our community from every perspective and every space, because it's having a huge impact on everything else.
You're absolutely correct.
And the mental health of those officers.
100%.
What happens and moves forward. Mm-hmm.
100%. I think that it's important, first of all, to talk about these things, to recognize these risks are out there, and that it's why we as humans in a community need to pay attention to the people in our sphere. If everybody's looking out to the person on the right and the left, you know, hopefully we can have a greater impact of reaching out to people who are struggling.
If everybody... Mm-hmm. And this is true of everything. We can blame politicians and there's plenty of blame. We can blame leadership and there's often plenty to blame. But if everyone would just do a little bit, and even if that little bit was just take the time to do exactly what you just described, you can move mountains.
You can. And in a community like ours, which, you know, we can get our arms around this community, which is a beautiful thing. And it's why I love to work here, because you can sort of see the impact of your work in a way that you may not see in a community like Chicago. But in a community like ours, where there's so many caring individuals, we can make that difference if we just, you know, pay attention to the people in our neighborhood, in our in our sphere, right next to us.
All right. I want to have a conversation mm-hmm. about vaccines and parental rights versus public health. I saw a really interesting story yesterday. And then one of the stories I sent to Nick, and I think I forgot to send the other one. The one was you're basically suggesting we give up on trying to control the misinformation on social media. You just can't. There's nothing to be done. I don't know if that's true or not, but it was an interesting take, like that we'd better, that our emphasis ought to be on not people sharing phony election stuff, but stuff that's actually physically damaging and harming people, you know, concentrate on that. The other study that I referenced from the University of Illinois is people today more than ever cannot separate fact from opinion.
Mm-hmm. Remember those tests we took in school?
This is what they did. They literally had thousands and thousands of people.
Is this fact or is this opinion?
And we are at an all-time high of not being able to differentiate those two.
That's really frightening.
Which then plays into all of this other stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so is social media the cause or the symptom? You know, and if the cause is I can't determine for myself the difference between fact and opinion, then how do we ever even have a conversation about public health?
Well, that's really difficult.
And there's a guy running for president who has made this his campaign.
Mr. Kennedy.
Yes.
Yes.
And so it is one thing when, you know, Aaron Rodgers does whatever Aaron Rodgers does. And I think for a long time, people have kind of looked at athletes and went, yeah, okay, you know, that's your opinion.
Right.
But it's all jumbled now into one big mess. And then someone in your responsibility to provide public health.
Yes.
We are at a weird junction point.
We are. And so what I like to tell people, at least in this community, because I'm going to be honest with you, the problems are so large. Sometimes it's overwhelming for me to think about how we solve these problems on a large scale. And I'm not sure I'm smart enough to do that. But in our community, what I encourage people to do is reach out and have conversations with their local healthcare providers, their doctor, their family doctor. You can come to Crossing. Because what I know is we have a really high quality medical community here. And the physicians and the medical providers in our community are solid and make good evidence-based decisions. So if you are concerned or you have read something on social media that's health related and you're just not sure, before you go down that rabbit hole, have a direct face-to-face conversation with a real live healthcare provider in your own community.
But these are people that have been trusted for their entire lives. And now all of a sudden are not. And that's the thing I can't figure out. I mean, in public opinion polls, right? Yeah. Where do nurses and doctors rank on trustworthy professional? I mean, always at the top of the list.
Nurses 100% have been at the top of that Gallup poll for as long as I've been a nurse because I pay attention to that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that those things are slipping, as is the erosion of the general public's sort of faith in institutions. And I think that is all part of that slide.
Yeah.
Again, I just would encourage people to have direct conversations with people that they know. You know, the physicians in our community live in our neighborhoods. They, you know, they worship in our houses of worship. Their kids go to school with us. You know them. Talk to them.
But here's what we learned, though. Mm-hmm. During COVID, they didn't agree with that, so they weren't going to have that conversation. They're going to find the chiropractor online that agrees with them, right? I mean, he's got the lab coat close enough.
Yeah, we choose our algorithm, don't we?
But we didn't used to when it comes to health.
I know. And all I can say is what I'm saying to you right now. And again, this is another thing that if there's someone in your sphere of influence that starts to go down those rabbit holes, try to have meaningful conversations or at least listen and pose a different thought. You know, I don't believe in arguing with people because I think it just solidifies their opinions, but I do believe in listening for understanding and then offering a different way to see things. But it's true. It is a challenge for healthcare providers and public health. Absolutely. And so,
I mean, we're talking about things that I thought had been eradicated.
I know.
And they're back in the conversation in 2024.
Things like measles.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really hard. It's hard for public health providers. It's hard for pediatricians. It's hard for people who this is their life's work to see it start to slip and slide for no rational reason.
And if you look at even, and it's certainly not unique to America. It's this isn't sort of a country thing. If you look at what's going on in large chunks of population through South America and Brazil, and right now there is a huge outbreak of Zika, which I had to get vaccinated for. We went to Brazil, and I had to go to the Maine County Health Department, and they said, look, you don't want to get this. And I said, okay, yeah, that's fine. Give me the shot. And they gave me like a little converted outlet thing that I could take to Brazil with me to plug all of my stuff in.
Go Macon County Health Department.
It was great.
Yeah.
But I didn't question their expertise on this. It's now out of control.
Yeah.
Even though it's been a problem down there for a long time, but that says to me they're having the same sort of vaccination problems that we're having here in other areas.
It does. And the thing that makes me sort of not happy about it, but hopeful about this is if you zoom up and look at the time period, it hasn't been that many years since the pandemic. And when you see large sort of global shifts in thinking, you know, those things often will self-correct, but it takes time.
I'm sorry. I said Zika. It's dengue fever. My apologies. Fever.
That one's more fun sounding.
Yeah. Let me get back to the bump list. That sounds like a Stevie Ray Vaughan song.
There you go.
Dengue fever. but it's not a good thing. And maybe we had to be vaccinated for both, but it's dengue fever. What my point about measles coming back is this was pretty much under control.
Oh.
And now it's not. And how do we keep from slipping into that where we start worrying about things that have been not in our conversation for 70 years, 60 years?
Well, again, we've touched on it. It's that reduction in faith in institutions and faith in our healthcare providers.
All right. Here's my one last one on this, then we'll move on. Because it's been a busy show. I feel like
I haven't stopped.
Even though we do the same 3-hour time.
It's been a busy three
It's just
hours.
Been a rotating kind of lots of different topics. Here's the one thing I would say to public health proponents, and we should all be one, is there is a bureaucracy there. And there is, whether it's the state of Illinois or the United States of America or health department here or health department in Utah, this isn't personal, it's an attack. Terrible at messaging and getting to people. So it's almost like you're having a one-arm fight. We've got all this misinformation out there. You should trust us, but we have no idea really how to get to you.
You're correct. And I think that is an ongoing challenge for healthcare providers and public health providers who just don't have the same sort of outreach budgets and outreach expertise. And I think a lot of it's expertise. You know, I went to school to be a nurse and then healthcare administration, and I didn't learn about marketing. And it's why I have to have smart people on my team and why I talk to people like you. We can't rely on our own expertise when it comes to getting messaging out. And we also can't assume that people are going to come to us. And if we put it on our obscure Facebook page with 300 followers that everyone knows.
But you got to do all that.
Yeah.
But I've been in too many meetings around addiction, around all of these things before even the pandemic. And it's way harder now than it was even 4 years ago.
100%.
Where the whole mindset is, well, we got to print a pamphlet.
I think one of the things that complicates the messaging is who the messenger is, where if somebody is predetermined to disagree with anything that someone has said, they're not going to listen to them on science. That's their doctor. That's your opinion. And so the distrust happens not at a medical level. It's more of, I don't trust the person who endorsed that. And so I'm skeptical of the whole thing, even though I did hear the message and it came from somebody credible. It's somebody credible that I don't agree with on everything else in my life. Why would I agree with them on this?
You're right, Nick. And one of the tactics that's being used in public health is to shift our messaging through the use of community health workers. So it's taking people who are known in various neighborhoods and in various communities and groups, providing them with education and tools, and then, you know, arming them basically, and then sending them back out.
There's a lot of ways to do it. And it's not a knock. It's just, it's not what you're trained to do.
No, it's not. It's not our expertise.
And, you know, and it's so fractured and so much more complicated today than it ever has been. I mean, inside that are unique opportunities, right?
There are.
But it is way harder to kind of figure that thing out. But yet it's crazy to me. Like when you talk about public bodies, the smart ones have figured out. If we want to recruit police officers, if we want to do, I mean, we can't just do what everybody everybody else is doing. And we need to talk to people who actually do that for a living, because
right.
that's not what we were trained to do. And I think you're seeing more and more of that. I feel like health departments in general are just sort of, you know, it feels like a clipboard to me. Mm-hmm. And that's not fair to the people who put all the hours in and do all the work.
Oh, 100% but it, good work.
You know, but you can't just expect people to just be in the know on everything just because you are.
You're right. And I think that there's an arrogance sometimes in healthcare providers with us that we think that, well, we know we're the experts, people will come to us.
Yeah.
And maybe that used to be the case.
But it's harder now than it used to be.
The pandemic changed our environment. We just have to take a different approach.
All right. Nick's going to kill me. I got to take a commercial. He won't kill me. He'll just scorn. It'll be a
look. You'll get a look.
Yeah. All right. We'll do that back after the break. Stay tuned.
The 2024 St. Teresa High School Mega Raffle is going on now. The fundraiser helps St. Teresa offer a faith-based education to students in our area. Tickets are now on sale, and you can have a chance to win $100,000. Take advantage of special bundles by purchasing multiple tickets, increasing your odds of winning. Early bird drawing is April 12th, and final drawing is May 24th. Buy your tickets today for a chance to win $100,000 by calling 875-7950 or online at sttmega.com.
At Blaine's Farm and Fleet, we get you outdoors because we get you. Whether you're ready to hit the road, tackle the yard, or start a new project, we get you the right products at the right prices. Like 36-pound bags of Estate Crabgrass Preventer with lawn fertilizer, $32.99. Your choice of 5-gallon Midwest canned fuel cans, $19.99. All Armorall automotive wipes are on sale, $4.29 each. Plus, stock up on assorted Easter candy, 20% off. We get you outdoors because we get you at Blaine's Farm and Fleet.
Spring is here, and a perfect time to take advantage of a CD special from First National Bank of Decatur, offering an annual percentage yield as high as 5.28% for 9 months, depending on the product type. For details, visit either Decatur branch at 1688 Baltimore Road or downtown in the Milliken Building. You can also visit one of our other branches in Pena, Assumption, Taylorville, or Blue Mound. First National Bank of Decatur, the quality bank, FNB Quality, member FDIC.
You're listening to Byers & Company, streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
Back here on an unbelievably gray morning, which is usually the view is good. The view is still good. They've been doing something making noise all morning, and I can't figure it out. Clay even drove around the block for me after he left today to see if there was construction, and there's
you
not.
You didn't find anything?
No.
I would assume there was a huge dumpster or something.
I don't. It may be in the building?
In the building or underground.
Or underground?
Yeah.
So I think it's done now, but I just kept hearing this loud pounding all morning.
That's in your head.
No. No, it was not. It been a crazy show. Probably going to need the podcast page because it's been all over the place. You've got Jim Kimmons, six or seven Emmys, award-winning cameraman, now doing the NFL on Fox and live golf all around the world, was in studios with us sharing some of his stories. We also had our Hickory Point Bank invested people in. Clay was in from the Park District. Dr. Dean from Milliken, fresh back from a trip 16 days in Ukraine. Tanya Topper.
Mark.
Yeah. Mark Topper.
I know. Sports. It's just, I feel like we've earned our paycheck today.
You worked hard.
It is harder. People will say, the crazy thing is, and people that will sit in or guest host, it is hard. A show like today is harder for me than no guest for 3 hours.
Yeah, because you can just talk.
Well, I meant it's just segueing in and out and leaving that conversation behind and picking up the new one and trying to give everybody the amount of time.
It's the difference between driving in traffic and setting cruise control on the highway.
Oh, that's a really good analogy.
Yeah, I think that's pretty close.
That's a really good analogy.
Anyway, but it's been a busy one, an informative one. Lots going on.
Yeah, I've learned a lot.
I didn't know Nikki was leaving Good Sam and going to the Conservation District, but I'm sure that that's another one of those places. I think about the serenity and the calm and the joy that place provides through all of their efforts, and I wish more people knew about it. I mean, I feel like people are constantly surprised when we go, hey, you can rent a kayak, or, you know, we've got stories about it, you know? pretty amazing.
Snowshoes, if there's what? Absolutely. More than 4 inches
of snow? Cross-country skiing. I think so.
Yeah.
Cross-country skiing. They do all, like, all the amazing things. And just hiking their trails, you know, or visiting that glacial Kame. It's K-A-M-E.
Having a wedding under those pine trees.
So the pine forest is one of my all-time favorite locations in this county. Like, I love to go there in that, you know.
It always feels like
that's been there for
Blair
like
Witch
years.
Project to me.
Does it really? Yeah. It's my favorite. It's like you go under there and it's just quiet.
I love taking pictures. I mean, it's beautiful and it's weird, like the way it feels when you walk on it.
A natural canopy, which is different than being under a tarp or under an awning.
But at the same time, I feel like, well, depending on the time of day, this could be really fun or Blair Witch.
Right. let the light peer through. And
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Now make it nighttime.
Yeah. Ooh. I've been there at night. It's scary.
Have you?
It's scary.
I'm not that brave.
They do like nighttime hikes.
Yeah. Not for me.
Yeah? Mm-mm. I think it might be fun. Yeah. You go to the zoo at night.
Yeah, that's fun.
Way different than it is during the day. I mean, there's some unnatural kind of sounds coming out of there.
They're all natural.
No. I'm telling you, man, there's some stuff going, what was that?
Yeah. Listen, I lived in those Timber Cove apartments back in college.
Yeah.
And there's some sounds. But, you know, I also worked there. You know, through high school.
Oh, yes.
Cool. Yeah.
But I'm sure there are even more sounds now because the different kind of, you know.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
I love the zoo. Opening this weekend
and the
big
excited.
Critter egg hunt. So all of that is coming up. So there's plenty of good stuff.
Lots to do.
I'm going to ask you the question that I asked Nick the question earlier. I told Nick something and his response made me think about asking the question is a better way to put that. I was reading about three documentaries. Nothing better than a documentary. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love documentaries.
Love it.
And I will just about watch a documentary on anything except now. There's so many. I can't use that rule anymore, right? Which is a great problem to have. But I read about three upcoming documentaries.
Okay.
One about the singer Paul Simon.
Okay.
One about Gene Wilder. And one about Steve Martin. And Steve Martin is a two-parter. It's called Then and Now, I think. It's Apple. Because he's reinvented his career so many times.
I mean, in that one.
You know, he mm-hmm. at the end of, like in 1980, he just quit stand-up comedy. Yeah. And he was one of the biggest stand-up comedians there was. Mm-hmm. He was the first guy to host Saturday Night Live for five times. You know, he had a song on the charts that the kids today are all offended by. and some of it was goofy, most of it. But, I mean, sitting in the theaters watching The Jerk was unlike anything I had ever experienced at that point in my life at that age.
So I've read a little bit about him. And so I would choose that one hands down. And Perseverance sort of comes to mind.
The way he just gets tired and go, I've done this. Now I need to go do something else.
Well, and there's a lot of thought that goes into what he's done and the amount of work he's done on the back end with writing.
Right.
He's a good story.
Yes.
He's a really
good
story.
Tell you, if you're ever just looking for the sweetest movie in the world to watch, Roxanne is the modern day Cyrano de Bergerac story with Steve Martin and Daryl Hannah is great, right?
It's good.
Okay, so there's that one. Now, Gene Wilder, a little different animal. I mean, I so much of this is because when you grow up with people, right, versus like, and it, like, it's the debate about did, you know, people see Michael Jordan play versus LeBron fans. I mean, I think there's age bias and things that goes every which way. But like when I grew up, Gene Wilder was a huge thing in the movie theater, you know, with Richard Pryor, and it wasn't Willy Wonka. It was the Gene Wilder comedian, you know.
Right.
Blazing Saddles.
Blazing Saddles. That's exactly right. That's so funny. And so he was, and he didn't look like anybody else.
Mm-mm. No.
And then there was the whole Gilda Radner marriage, and she died so young of cancer. And then I didn't realize, you know, how bad he got, you know, quickly with Alzheimer's and there was I was seeing a clip, you know, of Mel Brooks, like thought he could help him to remember things and like how he was just unconsolable for weeks after he died and how close they were. Mm-hmm. So that's a life, right? But yet you think about somebody like Paul Simon, you know, who it's hard for me to explain to somebody younger how big Simon and Garfunkel were, right? I mean, they got back together in what, 1980, 81 to do that Central Park concert, and a million people showed up. That was unheard of then. Yes. Now, Taylor Swift would do that easily today, but that was as big as it was at that time. And then you think about his solo career, and he married Edie Brickell, and they're still together all these years later. And you go, oh, Edie Brickell, forgot all about her.
They all sound like beautiful stories.
Well, it's not an either or. I think that you can watch all of them.
They would all be good stories.
I have to come out like spaced out a little.
Yes, yeah, so I'm just saying. All
there's like a lot of pressure.
It's a lot to do.
You're going to be busy.
It's my favorite Tom Petty songs.
You did okay with the last song.
Yes, yeah, thank
good
you.
Job.
This is a classic rock song that I've taken
sure,
out.
Go right from this to Black Sabbath.
Thanks, Nick.
14-year-old kids programming Spotify. We will be back with you tomorrow bright and early 6 a.m. If you missed any of the podcast, driven by the Bob Brady Auto Group, we'll see you tomorrow.
WSOY Decatur and W277DB Decatur. WSOY, 1340 AM and 103.3 FM. Streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
This is RJ Crace with your stories now, brought to you by Shop on Main. DPD has released portions of the body-worn cameras and in-car video from the officers involved in the shooting on March 18th. During a press conference, Police Chief Shane Brandel also released the names of the officers involved, Dawson Roberts and Tanner Brummett, both two-year veterans of DPD. The suspect who was shot was identified last week as 38-year-old Rocky Dupin of Decatur. In the videos, officers can be seen ordering Dupin to the ground. After beginning to comply, Dupin stands up despite warnings from the officers before pulling a pellet gun from his jacket. State police.
You've been listening to the Newhoff Media Podcast Network. For more, visit newhoffmedia.com.